Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Might as well jump. We're back at 12 after the hour. That's what happens sometimes, isn't it, folks? You think about what you're going to do. You study. You're either starting a business, or you're thinking about expanding the business you have, or adding a new product line, or making a decision about a new computer program, or some new direction that you're going in. And you do the due diligence, and you compare prices, and you compare vendors, and you think about all the different ways that this will help you, and look at the good side and the bad side, but at some point in time, you have to make a decision, maybe before you're completely comfortable. And you just have to jump. You just have to do it. And that's the way it is in small business. A lot of times it's just us making our own decisions. And so that song is very appropriate. Joan Pride is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Hi there, Jim. Thank you.
It's good to have you back.
Well, thanks. It's wonderful to be back. Seems like only last week I was here.
I know. It seems like only a week ago, doesn't it? Joan, I'm so excited about what happened in the Atlanta airport this week.
Well, I think you should be.
Well, I was at Popeye's. I said, you know, chicken strips sound pretty good. I'll have some of those. And as I walk up, I hear these ladies saying, yes, darling, what can I get you? Yes, okay, here you go, my honey. I mean, it's just on and on. I mean, you would have thought that they were at a family reunion or something. And every comment, they weren't just sullen behind the counter. They were engaging, and there were four or five ladies across the way there that from the taking your order to serving your order to giving it to you to taking your money, all that. Every one of them looked their customers in the eye.
Wow.
And engaged them, and didn't just engage them, but you thought they were going to climb across the counter and give you a hug.
Yeah, you really lucked out there, I think.
Isn't that something?
It is amazing.
This was Popeye's, folks. I'm going to congratulate them, and especially Edith. Edith was the one with the loudest voice. She was the one you could hear all over the concourse. But Buddy, she was loving up those customers like nothing I've ever seen. And if we could get everybody to behave as those people did, then you know the marketplace would change overnight. There'd be a lot more happy people in the marketplace, Joe.
Boy, we would be thrilled.
We would be, wouldn't we? Anyway, so I'm always complaining about how customer service is eroding and encouraging small business owners to fix that. If you get a chance, folks, I think I was in Concourse B. Go buy that Popeye's, and maybe they're like that in the stores. I haven't been to a store, Popeye's freestanding store, in a while, so maybe they're like that there.
I don't know. They may be.
Would you check that out? Do some research on that for me today.
Okay, thank you. That'll be tough, but somebody's got to do it, right?
Joan, do you remember a couple of years ago when we were talking about when the economy was in the doldrums after the crash of 2000 and the attacks of 9/11 and et cetera, the economy kind of went into a little bit of a funk, and the states were really reeling from not collecting as much money, and they were really in bad shape, and some of them, I think we even predicted maybe one might even take bankruptcy or something. I forgot. It was pretty bad.
Well, what I remember is that during the good times prior to that, we kept saying that the states needed to really shore up their rainy day funds, but they really hadn't, and that they were going to have to pay the price, and then they did.
I remember, yeah, you're right. We actually went back. We had a cycle before that, didn't we? When they had so much money, they were actually talking about looting. As I remember, they were talking about looting the unemployment reserve, you know, as if you know, happy days were going to be forever, and of course, hopefully, they didn't do that. But now we're back in a cycle, and this cycle, though, Joan, seems to be a lot more healthy than the one in the 90s.
Yes, I think so. Let's hope that that's the case.
Right, but they seem to be doing pretty well. In fact, you guys say that the states have an additional $43 billion to spend and save, and I love this last word that you guys printed this time, Joan, or return through tax cuts. And when I saw that, I had to get my pen out and write down ha, ha, ha beside that.
Well, except that I guess they're not going to do that.
Well, I mean, I don't think that they're going to give the money back, but you also do report that there are seven states that are considering tax cuts. Now, I think the operative word there is considering, right?
It's considering, right.
Have you ever
But the other operative phrase is at least, so there could be others.
Well, have you ever known, in the history of mankind, has any state actually lowered taxes on their own without some kind of a, you know, storming the
ramparts? I have absolutely no idea. So you're saying you can prove that no one ever has?
I can't prove it, but I would say that the high percentage money would be on no.
Mm-hmm.
that would be my opinion. But total revenue this year for the states, and you're lumping all these guys together, I guess, is up 9% this year.
I know it's pretty amazing, and we're saying that only five states still face red ink, which is pretty good.
Well, and one of those states, which surprises me, is Colorado. Remember when we were bragging on Colorado a couple of years ago? They were one of the states that was doing pretty well when everybody else was not doing well.
I'm also surprised about Texas too.
Yeah.
You would think with the oil that things would be going very well, so I don't know what's going on there.
Well, that's a good point, but of course, when we thought about Texas, the classic thinking that way for Texas was when there was a lot of oil drilling, and I'm not sure that there's as much as there was, or exploration. I'm not sure about how much there is of that going on down there. That may be. I just don't know. Joan, one of the things that I don't see in your report here this week, in your Kiplinger letter this week, that I thought about when I saw the increase in revenue for states, is that one of the things the states were trying to do to shore up their revenue was to go after internet sales tax.
Okay.
Remember that? That's been a big push to get get anything delivered to a state that's purchased over the internet, get it taxed, so that we'd have to, small business owners would have to collect those taxes and distribute.
Well, and a lot of that is happening voluntarily, too, because so many, you know, it used to be online organizations were online, but now so many of them have connections with bricks and mortar companies.
Right. A Nexus.
The perfect example of that is Amazon.com and Borders.
Right. No, exactly. You're exactly right. But most companies that sell online don't have a Nexus, and they don't pay the sales tax. And so they came up with how much that was costing them. But I guess my point that I was going to make, Joan, is that maybe this will take a little bit of the heat off of that issue, because I think that's a bad idea. Any kind of a collection of internet sales tax, where small business owners who sell online would have to, I think there's something like 7,000 different precincts, tax code collecting entities around the country, and we don't want to have to keep up with that. Stand by, we got more to come with our good friend Joan Price, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor, right after these messages. It's 20 hours. Stay with us. Back at 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Lassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Price, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, we're talking about how the states are faring these days with regard to collecting tax revenue. There is one state here that you guys identify as states that are considering tax cuts, and one of them is Massachusetts.
Yes.
Now, and I know it's because they have a Republican governor. That's what
there you
point
go.
That out. That those two, Ohio and Massachusetts, have Republican governors. Now, Kiplinger said that, folks. I didn't say that. But we all know that I don't know about Ohio, but in Massachusetts, the governor doesn't run the state. The legislature does.
Oh, okay.
Right?
If you say so.
So it's not going to, you're not going to get, folks, you folks listening in Massachusetts, you're not going to get any tax cuts. don't count on that. but also, you do point out, and I mentioned a minute ago about collecting sales tax on internet, you do point out that some states are focusing on tax overhauls, and that they want to catch more services in sales tax nets. And, you know, if you think about it, I'm sure they're looking at this and they're saying, okay, let's see, the United States is becoming more of a service economy, sales tax typically on products. So we got to figure out how to tax services, right?
Sure, which isn't as easy, but I think it's, you know, important for them to be thinking along those lines.
Right. Well, and I guess it kind of makes sense. I mean, I mean, I can. If I were in charge of state revenue, that's where I'd be looking. I put it that way. I don't want to give them any ideas, but the point that you guys make, Joan, at the bottom of page one, is that all of this new activity focusing on new ways to collect revenue is going to wind up being a net increase in tax paid out by the citizens.
I don't know how this happened, because we started the page talking about how states were doing so much better, and by the end of the page we're talking about tax increases. Oh, well.
Well, I'm a little depressed now. I started out kind of being, you know, a little bit, you know, I thought we were like Pollyanna. I thought we were playing the glad game there at the beginning, you know. And now we're kind of down there in the dour side. But let's move over and talk on page two. You guys talk about property tax windfalls, a potential for property tax windfalls. Are you guys talking about, are you saying that there won't be much of a windfall of property tax? Are you talking about because valuations are going up, property values are going up?
Is your question, are we saying that there won't be a windfall?
Well, are we saying
there won't be a windfall?
I guess what I'm saying is, are you thinking that since property values are going up, it would be intuitive to think that tax collection should go up when they do reassessments?
Well, they should, but as we say, homeowners are upset about it. So governments are moving to adjust their rates so that people don't get slammed any worse than they already have been.
Well, yeah, this is an interesting dynamic here, Joan, that I hadn't thought about till you guys pointed this out, which is one of the reasons why I read Kiplinger's letters. Joan, if you think about how, you know, many places, I mean, I'm hearing like 25 and 33% a year in places like where you live in Washington and other places, inflation every year on real estate. And I would see, again, if I'm thinking diabolically like a state revenue person, I'd be thinking, okay, if the values are going up, they're selling these houses for more. Maybe it'd be a good investment to come in and do a reassessment, which they do from time to time, don't they?
Oh, absolutely.
And reassess the properties based on the values, and then the next thing you know, you got a higher ad valorem tax bill.
Right.
So anyway, it's just interesting to see how that's going to work out. It'd be something for folks to pay attention to. But you guys say that it probably won't be a windfall. So we'll have to see how that plays out. Joan, let's move down and talk about the economy. The Treasury bond issue. Now, you used to be in the bond business, right? You used to cover those, didn't you?
Only municipals. Stayed away from everything else.
Well, I don't think you talk about this in this piece, but don't we need to mention that the Treasury is thinking about coming back out with a 30-year bond?
Well, that's right, because it had gotten rid of the 30-year bond because that rate was not really the benchmark anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the people I talk to, the economists I talk to, are really encouraging the government to come out with a 30-year bond. Steve Forbes, I know, thinks it's a great idea.
Yeah.
I'm not a bond expert, but I listen to those guys, and so when they say things, when they say something's good, my economists and folks like Steve, I pay attention to them, and I believe they know what they're talking about.
The thing about insurance rates right now, the one thing I do know about them is that they seem to be kind of screwed up, because on one hand you have the Fed that keeps raising short-term rates, but long-term rates, such as mortgage rates, are staying fairly low. They're not being pushed up in tandem.
You know why?
Tell me why.
Well, no, I'm asking you. You're the expert here.
No, I have no idea. People are scratching their heads over this.
The thing that I read about recently that I thought was interesting, Americans are not saving. We're saving less and less, as if that were actually possible. I didn't know that was possible for Americans to save less. But, Joan, apparently in other parts of the world, the citizenry are saving more. They're not spending. They don't have the consumer economy like we do and as much, and so they're saving more money. And that money apparently is seeking a home in the United States. That money's coming this way, apparently. And I think that's one of the things holding down these long-term interest rates. Stand by. Quick break. Right back with Joan Bright after these messages. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Oh, mirror in the sky, what is love?
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for staying with us. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. And don't forget the new little feature we have on our website. In the if you go to the homepage and you go over to the left side, or even any page, really, on the left side, the left column, the section called, the little link called This Week's Show Schedule, if you click on that, any interviews that we've already had, especially once we go off the air for that day, that we previously conducted, you can find that archive on the little speaker by their name. Just click on that, and it'll pop up our little player, our little audio player. You have to have Real Player to do it, and you can hear just that interview. It makes it very easy. So if you know somebody's been on the show and you wanted to go back and hear just that interview, that's what that feature's for. So I hope you'll take advantage of that. Joan Pride is with us. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, one last thing on the economy here, and I know you were pretty upset about this because I know that's how you make your money. You've become incredibly rich by getting all these new IPOs. I mean, you knocked it out of the park in the 90s taking advantage of all those IPOs, I think, right?
Absolutely, whatever you say.
That's where the jet came from. But apparently IPOs remain subdued. Now, tell us what that means.
Well, it means that the initial public offering for companies that were private that wanted to go public and get their stock out in the market has really not picked up, I think, as much as we thought was going to happen. And even though the economy has been getting better and things are going well, the stock market has been kind of sluggish, so that really hasn't helped.
That's one of them. And also, we can't compare IPO activity now to IPO activity 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago.
Right.
That was when we had popular delusions and the madness of crowds, as Charles McKay called it in his, in his 19th century book. It was nuts. The laws of economics were attempting to suspend those, and so we don't have that delusion anymore. And so now we're dealing with real money, real customers, real products and services. And so I think that's part of the other thing, Joan. I think we can sum up the other issue in two words. You know what those words are?
No.
Sarbanes-Oxley.
Oh.
Sarbanes-Oxley. Tell us what that is, Joan.
Well, Sarbanes-Oxley was a law that was sort of in response to the whole Enron / MCI / so many others.
WorldCom, Costco, et cetera.
Corporate malfeasance problems. And this was designed to basically clean up boardrooms in corporate America. And there are those who think it's a good law and others who think it went too far. And we even wrote a story, this is way back when, saying that some of the smaller public companies that were sort of on the bubble there decided to go private just because it was too much hassle to keep up with all those rules.
I've had some of them on my show. I've interviewed some of them. We've talked about the fact that they took their company back private because it was too much. It was already almost prohibitive if you were a certain size to manage all of the compliance. But when Sarbanes-Oxley hit, and by the way, they passed that in 90 days. Anytime the government does anything that quickly, look out. You're in mortal danger. And so anyway, I think a lot of companies, are not public right now that would have become public had it not been for Sarbanes-Oxley. But, of course, Joan, Sarbanes-Oxley is filtering down into non-public companies, too, the auditing procedures. And the
cost of an audit now, everybody's paying more.
Right. But I do think that's one of the things that people look at. I mean, it's on the radar screen of companies that are thinking about going public. So, folks, if you were planning on making a lot of money, if you're looking for the days that you thought were the great days of the 90s and getting in on IPOs, you're going to have it's going to be a lot more competitive these days. Joan, let's talk about what the government is working on with regard to anti-spam rules. Obviously, we know that spam is the bane of the existence of those of us who are online, and we need some protection from these folks, and the government can contribute, can't they?
That's right. Now, what we're talking about here, though, is marketers that are getting help complying with those rules. Because I guess they felt that the FTC, there's too much alphabet soup
right.
in government, the FTC was clarifying the regulations for senders
right.
of emails.
Right. And well, that's all part of the traffic jam we've got out there with legitimate email marketers and illegitimate email marketers. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more right after these messages. It's 10 Sweetville. I'm Jim Blasingame. I'll be right back.
Your country in the city, Deauville. It ain't much, but it's home.
We're back in 1710, Atlanta Rhythm Section. I'm in Doraville for you. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And folks, as you know, the Kiplinger letter is the one that Joan and I work off of every week, the flagship document, publication of Kiplinger. It's been around since 1923. And Jones joined them not too long after that.
Excuse me? Checking to see if I'm paying attention?
And that's the flagship letter. It comes out every week. You can get it by email or by regular mail. I get it both ways. I can't get enough of it. And they have three biweekly letters, I should say: the California letter, the tax letter, and the agricultural letter. And then there's a magazine that many of you have seen on the newsstands out there. If you haven't seen it in your mailbox, Joan, tell us about it.
You bet. It's Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And if you haven't been to Kiplinger.com, I hope you'll do that soon because there's a lot of good stuff there. You guys make a lot of free stuff available, Joan, in addition to the subscriber section. And folks, I hope you're taking advantage of that 30-day free trial. And you can also make a phone call. And when you call, you get to tell those people that you heard it about them from me. Right, Joan?
Absolutely, and see what happens.
And they'll just be so excited.
They'll just hang up on you, yeah.
These people aren't in India, are they, Joan?
One would hope not. No, I believe they're in the good old USA.
What's the phone number?
Okay, our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Joan, we were talking about spam and email marketers. You know, when I think about, I'm an email marketer. My newsletter goes out every week. You guys are email marketers, basically.
Sure.
And so think about it as a highway, and you got legitimate businesses going up and down that highway, and they're turning into customers' offices. They're turning out off the highway into customers' driveways that where we've been invited. We've been told. Please
where you've
come
been
here.
Invited,
we,
right?
We want your stuff.
Right.
And then there are the other people who are delivering drugs and illegal stuff. Or they're delivering it in an illegal way, and they think they can drive up down that highway and come to your business uninvited. And that's the
right.
spammers.
That's the problem. And the solutions are hitting the legitimate guys as
right.
well as the illegitimate guys is the problem.
Exactly. And so what you're saying is the FTC is trying to sort through this traffic congestion, right?
Well, exactly. And one of the problems is when you're pitching, I guess you have a problem when you're pitching products for more than one company, and the rules were confusing in terms of which firm or firms had to comply. And I guess that now the FTC has straightened that out. But and they've also says they've also reduced the risk of noncompliance, which is interesting.
Right, right. Joan, another thing that you guys point out in this section is making sure that if you have customers' financial information, that you don't just throw it out. That you,
oh, yeah.
you actually shred it, you obliterate it, you burn it, you pound it to smithereens.
You don't want to be the reason that they end up with a problem with ID theft.
Exactly, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And this is where, Joan, I'd like to help sell a little bit of shredding business. There are people in every community who will come to your building and come to your location and bring a truck with them with a big atomic shredder on the back of it.
Wow.
And I mean, it'll take paper clips and staples and everything. It just knocks it out.
I didn't know that.
And we have a company come to our office, and they about once a year or so, and we just do a big shredding project.
Wow.
And I always fear that we're going to shred something I'm going to need later. You know what a pack rat I am, but my
has that ever happened?
My folks are sure.
Bet it hasn't.
Well, I think it has happened, but they deny that. They keep telling me that what I want is just lost. They'll find it one day, but they haven't found it yet. You know, that's yet to be seen. They keep putting me off. But anyway, folks, make sure that it's just too easy. And you know what, Joan? That shredding work that they do is not expensive.
You'll
be surprised.
Yeah,
and it's certainly cheaper than keeping it hanging around in a bunch of file drawers. Joan, let's move over and talk about Mr. Greenspan. He's got an important date coming up.
Yes, he is going to be leaving, which is, I can't believe it.
Next year, huh?
That's right. January 31st will be the retirement party, I guess. It's been a long time.
Well, some people think he's late for a very important date. He should have already gone. I think on balance he's done a good job. There have been some times when I thought he pushed the button one way and he couldn't get it. It was stuck or something. He couldn't take his finger off the button or something.
Yeah.
But isn't that true
of so many of the Fed chiefs?
That's right. Yeah, I think you're right. What does Kiplinger think about his successor?
Well, we think that Bush would actually like to keep him around, but the poor man is 79 years old. I mean, he's in great shape, but we're saying that there's three candidates that I'd be happy to name, but there's no clear-cut favorite.
Go ahead and name them. I want to make sure that.
I hope I can pronounce this right. Ben Bernanke?
Bernanke.
Glenn Hubbard, who you've probably, many people have heard of because he was the president's top economic advisor.
Mm-hmm.
And Martin Feldstein, who's been around for a long time as well.
Those are three really good names.
Yeah.
I mean, either one of those guys would do a good job.
Who do you think will get it?
I'm going to say there's a 50-50 chance that it'll be somebody that's not on this list. And I'm not going to say it's going to be somebody nobody's heard of, because I think the financial markets will have heard of them because. I got to be fair about this. It could be a lady, right?
Could be.
You know, I'm surprised you haven't pointed that out. You're usually on the ball.
That's right.
On the political correct thing. But anyway, whoever it is, I think the financial markets might know. But I think it's a 50-50 chance that this person's name will not be something that would roll off of any of our tongues very easily. Quick break, right back with Joan Pryde. We're going to talk about HSAs, health savings accounts, and some other insurance issues right after these messages. Stay with us. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. That's Joe Cocker in the background. He's a crazy man. Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Letters. And Joan, you're a big Joe Cocker fan, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I have a hairdresser who is a huge Joe Cocker fan.
Oh, really?
Last time I went, he'd just gotten some new Joe Cocker live album. So I had to listen to Joe Cocker during my entire haircut.
Obviously, I was
in a real good mood by the end of that haircut.
Joan, let's talk about, there's an HR section here on page 3 where you guys talk about what insurance premiums are doing these days. Tell us about it.
Well, this is sort of interesting. The bad news is that health insurance premiums will go up 9% on average next year. The good news is health insurance premiums will go up 9% on average next year, meaning that is not a double-digit increase.
Right. So we don't like the number, but we'd like the trend.
We sure hope it's a trend. Yeah.
Well, you know, Joan, we bought an HSA, a health savings account, within the last year, and we just got a new increase. I previously reported on the show that it was around 25%, but I was told later by my HR/everything else expert in the office that it was more like about 31%.
Oh boy!
Took our breath away. Guess what? Yeah. We're changing companies. Post haste. Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Post haste. Yeah. But you know, I've been thinking about this, Joan, this HR thing, the HSA thing. Folks, I really do want to encourage you to look into the HSAs. And, Coach Joan, as you know, this is where the policyholders have some level of self-insurance. They have a $1,000 deductible or up to a $5,000 deductible, I think it is. And you pay a lower premium, supposedly, at least that's what I thought. And you the money that you set aside, that you up to $1,000 a year, $5,000 a year, whatever the number is tax free, right? You can like an
right.
IRA.
I guess my concern now is if the premium isn't really getting a lot lower, I'm not sure how you encourage people to do this.
You're exactly right. And
that's what worries me, because they're going to have such a high deductible, there has to be a trade-off here somehow.
Exactly.
Why do I want
right.
high deductible and high premium?
Well, let me tell you, Joan.
Tell me.
Because we went back out to the marketplace, and we found
right.
another company
oh.
that gave us a rate not only was it not at that level, it
yeah.
was lower than the previous level that we'd been paying.
Wow.
Considerably
so there must be,
lower.
So you really have to comparison shop when it comes to an HSA right now.
Well, here's the point that I think I wanted to make, Joan. I'm not.
Okay.
This is just anecdotal. This is just my belief. I don't know this for a fact.
Okay.
But HSAs haven't been around that long.
True.
And I think and even though they're the new version of MSAs, medical savings accounts, those did, you know, there were only a few hundred thousand of those ever sold.
Yeah.
And so the insurance companies don't have a lot of experience with these products, and I think that they were throwing the risk. The actuarial risk element of these type of programs, these high deductibles, they were throwing us in with all the other people. They didn't have any experience.
Oh.
And now that they've got more people buying these, they've got enough that they can maybe almost have, we can have our own actuarial value, so to speak, just the HSA experience.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
And maybe that's what's causing this other company to say, we don't have to charge that much. We
yeah.
know we now have some experience with people who have HSAs and of course in our case that insurance company had never had a claim on us.
Oh.
The other one, the one that went up so much.
Yeah.
So my point, Joan, to answer your question, I'm glad you made the counterpoint there, is that folks, check this out and what our experience has been. If you don't like the rate, keep looking. You'll find one you like. And HSAs, Joan, I think, is a very important part of the ownership society that President Bush talks about.
Oh, absolutely. That would definitely be moving health insurance at least a step in the direction of it being more based on the employee than the employer.
Right. Right. And the more we self-insure, the better healthcare consumers we become, Joan. And guess what? That money that we put aside that we don't use for our own health care, we can
right.
pass it on just like any other asset. How about that?
Not bad.
Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today, as
thank
always.
You, Jim.
Give us the website one more time.
Sure. It's www.kiplinger.com.
Thanks, Joan. We'll see you next week.
Okay, Jim.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, it's official. She is the best. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame signing off from Midtown Manhattan, New York City. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.